I had only been in practice a few years. One of my patients, Stella, was there for her annual exam. She'd recently turned 50, so I asked her if there were any changes in her menstrual cycle. And she said, actually, there have. I haven't had a period in 8 months. So I went on to ask her about hot flashes, sleep, vaginal dryness, you know, the usual. For every symptom I named, she said, nope, not a problem. So I finished with, okay, overall, it sounds like you must feel pretty good. Stella looked at me and said, no, I feel terrible. I'm now officially invisible. It would have been so much easier if she had just had hot flashes. Then I would have known how to help her. But feeling invisible? I honestly didn't even know what she meant until years later, when I started to feel a little invisible. Today, I'm joined by Christine Morrison, who started out as an editor in the beauty and fashion industry, but then pivoted and is now on fire with her Writing in Black and White column. The overarching theme of her writing is about the social constructs in the fashion, beauty, and wellness industry that inform the way society views women and the way women often feel about themselves as they age. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, a gynecologist, best-selling author, and a nationally recognized menopause expert. When it comes to menopause, midlife, and what comes after, I'm betting you've not gotten a lot of information from your own doctor. If women are given good information, they'll make good choices. And I'm here to give you the inside information. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
You know, I'm honored to be talking to you. I had to tell you, over the last few weeks, I've done the deep dive into Writing in Black and White, which I love. And I keep thinking, how am I ever going to keep this interview to under an hour? I mean, there's so much good stuff. But before we get into this whole thing and what you're doing with your writing, I'd like to talk about your career trajectory, because I love people who switch professions, switch jobs, have a second act. You started your career in the fashion industry, but let's face it, that's all about being youthful. So what I want to hear from you is when and why you came to embrace the topic of aging as a social construct. So let's start with when. When did this all happen? When did you pivot?
Well, I pivoted at 40 because I had spent about shy of 20 years actually working a lot in beauty and then in fashion. And you're right, it was all about young and fashion and being pretty. And I was in New York City a lot of that time. But at 40, I was getting married. And my husband-to-be, we needed to move from New York City to Boston. And I kept thinking, what am I going to write about? Rugby shirts? There's no fashion in Boston. And he said, this is your chance to finally be a writer. Because I had gone to journalism school. And all through my time in New York, I had gone to Parsons and NYU, constantly taking writing classes about breaking into women's magazines because I knew it was so hard, but personal essays were the way to break in at that time. And I thought, I have this itch that I have got to scratch.
Okay, but let me stop you for a second. Was your itch just to be a writer, or was it an itch to talk about this particular topic?
It was to be a writer, but it was brewing about how women felt about themselves because of all the career things that I had learned. Like the good thing that I can't even believe that this was in the year, this is 25 years ago, but I was working on Olay around the time that Olay wanted to become one name. It was Olaz, Ulan, and I was working with the brand people on all the future. What was the identity? What were the products? And we went around the globe. And we talked to women about how they felt about themselves just to get insights, not about products specifically. And it was so telling that, I mean, you could be in Germany or you could be in California. Women were saying the same things. I just want to feel good about myself. And that stuck with me. And then, of course, then I worked at Calvin. It was a very tough place to work if you weren't really skinny and really tall. And
okay, let's just face it, if you weren't Brooke Shields, you know?
Or Kate Moss.
I looked back at that Brooke Shields famous ad about nothing's going to come between me and my Calvin. She was 15 years old. She weighed 80 pounds or something. And this was the face of what women should aspire to. So we're going to circle back to Brooke Shields a bit later because I have some questions about that, because I know you've written about her.
And so when I started to write, I really wanted to write for anyone that would take me, because in the beginning of writing, everyone's like, well, where's your book? Well, I don't have any clips. But I slowly started to get clippings, and I found what's now the defunct The Fine Line. About 8 or 9 years ago, I found them, and it was helmed by someone in her 60s who really felt that there was a white space. This is before any of these other people now that are really popular, but she was making a difference because she said the Good Housekeeping Red Book era, of which we don't belong in, we're the healthiest, wealthiest, most active generation, we need material of our own. And so she brought me on to write for them.
So what year was that roughly?
2018.
I mean, even then, that was innovative because every magazine has always been skewed towards youth. And of course, now that menopause is suddenly popular, don't get me started on why that is, but you know, so I've been talking about it for decades and all of a sudden it's popular, but it is. And they realize that menopause sells. And I think what's most telling is a few months ago, I did an episode on Cosmopolitan doing this article on sex over 60. And I'm thinking, oh my God, Helen Gurley Brown is probably cheering from her grave.
That's so crazy to me. The thing is, even at The Fine Line, we really didn't talk about menopause.
Nobody
and that
did.
Was 8 years ago. And you're probably floored by that, but not because
no, I know, because I've been in doing media for many, many years, and I cannot tell you how many times I'd be talking to my producers at the Today Show or Good Morning America or Dr. Oz and say, we really need to do more menopause. And they'd say, no, our advertisers wouldn't like it. So it wasn't really that they were denying that women wanted this information, but this is what drives these shows. They have to have sponsors, and sponsors are selling youth. They're not selling vaginal dryness and wrinkles, but now they are.
And sadly, The Fine Line went out of business after a couple of years because she couldn't monetize it. The material, people would go crazy for what we were writing, but the material just, there were no advertisers.
Well, now there are. Now there are plenty of people who have acknowledged that there's a lot of money to be made in menopause. All right, we're going to get back to that again. But let's go back to this concept of women feeling invisible as they age, because you've written about that a lot. I've thought about that a lot. I mean, that really struck a chord with me. And you wrote that studies reveal that 70% of women experience a sense of becoming invisible as they age. So most women, and there's even a name for this, it's invisible woman syndrome. So talk about invisible woman syndrome. What is it, and what kind of impact does it have on women as they age?
It's sad because it's in every woman's life, because it happens in the workplace. It happens at home, in your marriage, with your family. It happens with friends. And I don't even know if you can necessarily say, if I feel good about myself, I'm going to be able to work through that. It doesn't matter, I think, your self-perception or self-awareness. It just is, you're kind of overlooked. And I don't know what to say other than women then start a self-fulfilling prophecy. They start to then dress like they don't matter, and they start to wear bigger, oversized clothes so that they don't show up for themselves. And then you see a like sort of a downward spiral.
Although, you know, it's funny because part of that, I think women do it as a protective mechanism because maybe they, you know, as you said, they don't want to be noticed. And I think a lot of times, sometimes people just, it's such a huge adjustment. I remember this so clearly years and years ago. My mom was probably in her early 50s. And so I was in my 20s, and we were in the car and she was driving and the windows were open and a truck pulled up next to her side, and the truck driver whistled at her and gave her a thumbs up. And my mother waved and smiled and said, thank you. As we pulled away, I was like, Mom, I mean, my mother was one of the early feminists, and she would have been irritated and horrified at some guy catcalling or whistling or acknowledging her in that kind of a way when she was 20 or 30. And she said, oh, honey, you have no idea. I'm just so grateful. And I think a lot of times, as you say, people begin to dress the part because it makes it easier to deal with the fact that they are feeling invisible by actually making themselves invisible. And I think, and as you said, you know, I think it's so important, the point that you make, that this isn't just in someone's social life or maybe in their relationship. It's in the workplace. You know, it's this ageism in the workplace.
I read yesterday that 50% of recruiters think 57 is too old for a new job.
That's right.
Are we dead? I mean,
well, that's exactly it. They think either you are dead or you're too close to being dead to think about making it worthwhile to bring you on and go through the training process. Okay, let's talk about fear of aging, another thing that you've written about a lot. And obviously, fear of aging, a lot of it has to do with the fear of dying and getting sick and all that. But let's put that aside for a second and just talk about beyond worrying about disease and dying. Why do women fear aging so much? Is it because of this invisible woman syndrome? Is it more complicated than that?
I don't know if what led to all of this, but, you know, society with what we're supposed to look like and why youth is so celebrated and heralded with, you know, and so we're trying constantly to be younger, but the younger generations are just feeling like they're rapidly aging. So they're so scared of it now. And part of it is because of death and mortality. Part of it is they just don't want to change the way they look. They love looking young and healthy. And
because they know that it's now possible. I mean, let's be clear. In my mother's day, short of getting a facelift, there wasn't a whole lot anyone can do. And now with all the injectables and Botox, it's not as difficult. It's not as difficult to do. As you see the same thing, I know you don't write about this as much, or at least I don't think you do. Correct me if I'm wrong, but do you see this in men? Is this going on?
So I don't write about men. You're right. But I don't know. I know that men do worry about aging, but never like us. I mean, for one, every time you hear of a man, he's older and wiser. They automatically give them the characteristics. And then separately, they look better with wrinkles. They're like a fine wine that, you know, they always have these amazing things that they say. They don't say that about us.
No. And the other thing also is, let's not forget that beyond what happens at work and beyond what happens just in general life, if you look at single men versus single women who are in their 50s, 60s or 70s, you know, assuming that the guy's not a total troll, and especially if he's got a lot of money, he has no trouble dating women who are 20, 30, 40 years younger than him. You know, how many women do you know in their 60s or 70s, no matter how fabulous they are in every way, end up dating men that are more than 10 years younger than they are? So there's that too, you know, that women have a real reason why, if particularly if they're single and they're looking for a partner, that they're like, okay, this is the reality. I cannot look like I'm 50 or 60 or 70 years old. I have to look younger, which is also sad. And do you think it's getting better now, or do you think it's getting worse? This idea of women in their 50s, 60s, and beyond fearing the aging process.
I think that our generation's 50s and above, it's getting so much better. Because I don't know about you, but I'm surrounded by legions of women who are more creative, more invested in who they are and becoming more successful. Like, for instance, more startups by women, by people over 50 are more successful than startups by people over 30.
Yeah.
And we're all of this generation.
Yeah.
We're just completely out there creating, generating, changing brands, changing the world. And it's the younger people that I'm concerned about.
So, okay. I agree with you in the workplace that I think it's getting better. You know, I think it was last year I did a great interview with Jill Winebanks. I don't know if you know Jill Winebanks, but she's the Watergate prosecutor who is now one of an analyst for MSNBC. And she started her new career in her 80s. And we talked about this. It wasn't a second chapter for her. It was like a 10th chapter because she just did amazing jobs. But, you know, but you look in the media, you look on the news, and we are seeing women that do look older, whereas even 10 years ago, you know, everyone on the media looked like they were 12. So on one hand, yes, I think it's getting better. But on the other hand, as you say, what's terrifying is what's happening in not just the teen world, but the tween world. I mean, I did a segment not too long ago when I was talking about these tweens that are spending an absolute fortune on anti-aging skincare products. And they disappear into their bathroom every night for like an hour to apply all these skincare products so they don't age. and they're 12. So that doesn't sound better to me. So what's your take on that? Is this just, you tell me what you think.
Oh, it's terrible. I don't have a daughter, so I can't say as a parent, you just pull it out of their hands, because I don't know how that would be. But I know that mothers really struggle with it. I know that you've talked to Ellen Gendler all the time. I've talked to her about this. The amount of damage that they're doing for long term is just unbelievable. Forget the products. Yeah, they're spending a ton of money in Sephora. They're wrecking aisles. They're being abusive to employees. They're trying, retailers are trying to find ways around this.
Right, I heard people won't go into Sephora anymore because of these masses of teens that are basically taking over the place.
Exactly. I would love to know what portion of Drunk Elephant is bought by under 12 year old, because a lot of it started because of the cocktail of Drunk Elephant.
Right. A lot of the ingredients in Drunk Elephant and these other products that are marketed specifically to this group have been shown to be hormone disruptors. So aside from the impact on the skin and the damage it causes, there's also concern about the impact it will have down the road, not just in things like, making puberty earlier. We're wondering why that's happening, and this is one of the reasons, but a lot of other things as well. So
cancers and all of it.
What's also interesting about this is there are two women that I know that I'm very, very close with who are really smart and really accomplished. I mean, amazing, amazing women. One of them is a scientist. One of them is a producer for a TV show that I work on. Both of them have daughters in eighth grade. And both of those were like, okay with this whole thing. Because when I mentioned it, and they're like, yeah, it's her hobby. It's like you other girls used to collect this, they collect that. And I'm like, this is, aside from the damage they might be doing, the messaging
Where I struggle. It's one thing for them to have the parties around the products and everything, but the message we're sending is it's not okay to age, and also embrace where you are in life. If you're young, you're young. But as you get older, you need to embrace who you are. I mean, otherwise, to me, the best part of getting older is the peace of mind. Inject or don't inject. I don't, no right. judgment. I don't really care what people do. But it's more the intent. If I want people to feel as they get older, happy with who they are, but finding their authentic selves and all of that. And if they're fighting constantly to be somebody that they're not, whether it be through skincare or through surgery or whatever.
Well, first of all, it's exhausting. And second of all,
exhausting.
You're doomed to fail at some level.
You're doomed to fail. And that goes back to great deal of depression and all of the mental health issues that we have can be easily.
Which also is traced back to social media. Don't get me started. Expectation of what people are, supposed to look like based on the social media quote influencers, which is not a real job, but somehow I guess it is. Okay. So you mentioned Dr. Ellen Gendler, and everybody knows Dr. Gendler. She's been my guest. She's got about 1 million followers on Instagram, and she's a dermatologist. And by the way, Dr. Gendler and I are putting together a retreat this spring.
Oh my God.
A great spa getaway. Isn't that going to be great? But this is how I was introduced to you. I was talking to Dr. Gendler about something else, and she said, do you read Christine Morrison's work, A Black and White Column? And I said, no. And she said, first of all, you have to start reading it. And second of all, you must have her on as a guest. So I have Dr. Gendler to thank for introducing me to you. But one of the things that I'm kind of curious about, because I never actually asked her or you how you got to know each other and then how you started to talk to each other. But one of the things I love about Dr. Gendler's Instagram is all day, every day, she's outing stuff. She's debunking myths. She's saying, oh my God, do not put this product on your skin. This is what's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. So I'm kind of curious, how did you enter the world, each other's spheres in terms of this? Was it about debunking these products and the beauty industry, or tell me a little bit about that.
This was years ago. I picked up on her on Instagram, and I knew that she was a very renowned dermatologist, and I was doing an article about sunscreen, and I really felt like, well, number one, I don't use the word anti-aging in anything that I write, except to criticize the phrase anti-aging. I write for the Quality Edit. I have a monthly column, Fashion, Beauty, and Wellness Through the Lens of Aging. I am at least 25 to 30 years older than every single person on that team, which I absolutely love, because it gives me an opportunity to write about things that they do not address. And they have readers that want this. And I'm glad because it's also a lot of young people looking up, being like, oh, what is she writing about? But sunscreen is everybody. But sunscreen is the best aging product that we know for skincare. If you have do one product, sunscreen. So I went to Dr. Gendler. She was my source. And instead of going about products, but I said, here's how to read the label from a dermatologist. Here's what to look for and here's what not to use, because that's what people need. They need
absolutely. You know, I do the same thing with vaginal lubricants. I mean, yes, there are a few products I recommend because people want to know.
Right.
But what I really say is these are the ingredients that you need to look for on the label to know if it's something that's vagina friendly or something that's vagina poison. And people don't, they need to know that. They need to know that. Yeah. And so whatever impact she had on you, we know it was a good one. And in fact, she said something, oh, what did she say? Oh, she speaks the truth. She speaks the truth, which is a huge compliment from someone on Instagram outing the beauty and skincare industry.
I am honored to hear that from her. And one of my taglines for my Substack, Writing in Black and White Substack, is get informed, not influenced. I think the influencer culture is exactly one of the reasons why we're in the trouble that we're in. So
yeah. You know, you mentioned the phrase anti-aging, which is, in my world, a complete trigger. Because when you have these people who are anti-aging doctors, and what that generally means is that they are prescribing all manner of things that have not been vetted, have not been proven in any kind of a scientific study to be beneficial. And what people don't realize is when someone says that they're boarded in anti-aging, it's not the same as being a board certified dermatologist or gastroenterologist, which is a specific organization that does boards of medical specialties. This is an invented thing. You can literally do a weekend course, pay a lot of money, and suddenly you have been boarded in anti-aging. So talk about buyer beware, because in my world, it's really scary. But let's talk about the branding of the word anti-aging in your world.
Well, I totally agree with you. Number one, people throw it around and it doesn't mean anything. So I do think it sets up expectations for women, which we just talked about. We don't need to have any more higher expectations put on us about who we need to be or what we need to look like. But at the end of the day, aging is a privilege. We all need to remind ourselves that the opposite of anti-aging is not the outcome we want.
Death, yeah.
While I was on Olay, so I was just starting to learn a little bit about what this all meant and the messaging. And yes, they did talk about anti-aging, but they used to talk about the 7 signs of aging. I lost my own father in that time, and he was only 59. And so at 55, I am so every day thoroughly aware how grateful I am to be aging and that I want to surpass him by many, many, many decades.
Yeah.
And so it means to you, like you said, it's triggering to me as well.
But also when we think about what your goal is, it's not necessarily how you look. And I'm not saying you don't want to look nice, but it's about how is your body aging? Are you, healthy heart, healthy bones, healthy muscles, healthy brain? I mean, that's really what's important, but there's so much emphasis that is put on the, I won't say called superficial, but on the stuff that isn't. You can have someone that looks fabulous and they can be in terrible shape and they could
have
horrible health. But you do say, when you wrote this wonderful article about how ageism keeps getting rebranded and different phrases. And in that article, you say, why not have fun with growing older? That jumped out at me. So Christine, give an example of how to have fun growing older.
Oh God. Well, and so I think we don't have enough fun in our lives, period. I do CrossFit. I climb up on these rings. I swing. I do a trampoline workout right now. Well, so one of the reasons I was able to kind of jump into it literally is, I wrote about this amazing young woman who founded a company called Hazel, which is the chic leak undies that you can wear underneath leggings. And I mean, in the and they really hold a lot, because in the beginning I was off of it every 5 seconds. I was like, well, this isn't going to happen.
Okay. You know what I call trampoline workouts? Incontinence checks.
But Hazel, they're good.
It's good to know. And I mean, that's a different topic, but you know, and that we don't want to normalize leaking with diapers and underwear and all that, that it's great to know about that stuff and use it while you are making your floor.
Right. And I want to strengthen my pelvic floor, of course.
Yeah.
But I think having fun with fitness has been a big thing. And then I mentioned to you earlier is that I have twin 15-year-olds and I
am keep you young.
And they keep me very young. I really dive into whatever they're doing because that's how we stay super connected.
But to your point, you know, when you say, you know, jumping on a trampoline, the thing about that is when we think of trampolines, we think of that as being something that kids do. But yet the reason why kids love it is because that sensation of flying and being in the air. And that's an incredible thing to experience. And older people generally don't do that. So not only is it really good exercise and cardiovascular and balance huge as we get older. I mean, there's so many good things about trampoline, but it is fun. It's really fun. Okay, so I'm putting it out there to the audience. When was the last time you jumped on a trampoline?
You feel free.
You feel free, yeah. All right. So when we talk about accepting growing older and having fun with growing older and all that, do you think women shouldn't wear makeup?
I don't wear much makeup, but if you're trying to cover up who you are, maybe look a little deeper. There is some minimal skincare that you can do to get a better skin tone and skin texture. And then you don't necessarily want to cover up. The more you wear, I do think the older skin looks, but it's to each his own. But I think it's your intent. If you're trying to look younger, you know.
I know what we do. Okay, we get these double messages though, because you had one article that you were talking about celebrities who on one hand embrace growing older naturally and then turn around and sell their own line of skincare products. I think Pamela Anderson was the one that you specifically wrote about. And again, you know, we're getting two messages here. Embrace yourself, embrace your wrinkles. Oh, and then buy my products so you can look younger, which is kind of weird, right?
It's a weird one because, I mean, she has been lauded for coming out not wearing makeup and it's been awesome. And I think she looks great. She seems super happy with who she is. It was just right after all that hubbub happened, it was that she was coming out with a skincare line.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, so there was a method to her madness.
And
I felt like it was a lie.
Yeah. Well, to that point, so in another article, we talked about Brooke Shields for a minute before, but in one of the articles, you talked about Brooke Shields and how she was talking about how difficult it was for her, who was the face of youth, to age. And you had a little clip in that article, which was when she spoke at South by Southwest. When she gave that little talk, I was about 3 feet away from her because I was next on the stage.
So, no way.
So I was there. I was looking at her. And I turned to the person next to me and said, what do you want to bet? She's got a new product coming out. Booyah. There we were. Like 3 weeks later, she announces all of her, quite frankly, totally worthless products to ease your way through menopause. You know, it's like, here she is saying, hey, I was in this youth-driven world, and now I'm embracing the fact that I'm in menopause. Isn't this wonderful? And then she launches this product line, which, you know, I have one of my episodes, which is called Navigating Menopause Celebrity Style. And I do give Brooke Shields a hard time about profiting on these completely worthless products. So now knowing that part of it, when you wrote about Brooke Shields and how wonderful it was that there she was on the stage at South by Southwest talking about it's okay to get older. We have to get away from this youth-driven world. And now that you know that, does that change the way you think about it?
Yes, a little bit, because I didn't know about the menopause line. I knew about the hair. I thought she was doing a hairline. But I, at the time that I wrote that, I only knew about Beginning Is Now, sort of her platform to talk about aging and becoming who you are. And this is the beginning of a transformation that you should be embracing. And
And don't get me wrong. I have a lot of respect for her because she was well-spoken. I liked a lot of what she had to say. Many things that she said resonated with the women in the audience and really very much what you talk about as well in terms of living in a society that has this social construct of what it means to age. So kudos to her for that. I just wish she hadn't turned around and used this as a platform to sell her product, but I guess that's the way of the world. I want to pivot a little bit because we are like It seems like we've been talking for 2 minutes, but it's actually been much longer than that. So I want to talk about fashion a little bit, because you've been talking about skincare and makeup and all that. And you come from the fashion world. And this is a direct quote from one of your articles. My focus will continue to be fashion. I think you were talking about why you had pivoted from the fashion world to something else. My focus will continue to be fashion, especially as it relates to our identity and our well-being. So talk about the impact of clothes and what we choose to wear in terms of how we approach aging.
When we were talking about giving up and sort of feeling invisible, I feel like it is very common that women, as they get weight gain or just start to settle into a lifestyle that maybe isn't going to an office or isn't in being needed as often, people tend-
Or even if they don't gain weight, just the, let's face it, the redistribution that happens, suddenly you've got a belly, you've got muffin top, even if the scale hasn't budged, that is what
happens. The shape shifting is very real. And so people tend to then just put on whatever fits or whatever just they happen to have sitting on a chair day after day after day. And slowly you start to, I think, chip away at what brings you a little bit of joy, because there is a noticeable difference when you get dressed for the day than when you sit in your pajamas or sweats or something.
We also have COVID to blame for that shift.
We absolutely do.
Because, but, you know, I don't know about you, but I have yoga pants on right now.
Oh, so do I.
On, you know, a nicer top for this interview. But yeah, I mean, you know, so we have that piece of it as well. And the acceptance of going out in clothes that a few years ago, you know, I'm still in the club that says leggings are not pants. And the majority of women who are out there wearing leggings, quite frankly, I don't think should be. But, you know, and people call it body shaming. It's not that. It's just I think there needs to be kind of a certain
conscientious of what your body is like and dress for the body shape you have.
But also even, you know, the idea that when now it used to be that if you went to the symphony or the opera or the theater, the people would like dress up, which was part of the experience. It was part of the occasion. And now, of course, you would look ridiculous if you showed up to a play with a suit and a tie. People would think, what, did they just come from a funeral? I mean, people used to get on airplanes dressed like
that. Oh, I was just going to tell you, one of my husband doesn't love that I say this every time we fly, but I'm so discouraged by the way people dress when they get on a flight. Their behavior reflects it. They take their shoes off and they put their feet on your chair. But I do think you can be comfortable, but I do think that finding something that goes with your lifestyle in a way that you dress that sort of reflects who you are. And I think you just feel better about yourself.
I agree. But okay. Every time I see a magazine article with a title like Fashion for the Over 50 Crowd, I flip through it and think, I wouldn't wear that to take the garbage out. I mean, it is just horrible, this idea of the expectation of what women should wear. But on the other hand, having said that, I'm giving away clothes all the time to my younger daughters, because even though it still fits, I'm like, I'm too old for that. I would look ridiculous in that. So there is kind of this idea that there is a way to dress as you get older. I mean, I personally think, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this, I feel very strongly that anyone over the age of 5 should not wear puffed sleeves or ruffles, period. But okay, I'm, you know, maybe that's just me.
I think it's just like fitness. You should have fun with it. I don't like puffed sleeves on me because I'm broader because of CrossFit. But I do think that, again, it goes back to body shape. I'm not a big like cropped kind of top person. I don't think that looks good, but I don't like the phrase like age appropriate or fashion over 50, because who's to say that's our chronological age? What do you feel like? What do you want to dress like? Yeah. And then just have a little self-awareness about what your body shape is and dress in a way that's not going to be you're showing your backside or your shorts.
I mean, I think for me, the biggest thing that's changed as I've gotten older is I love clothes. I will admit it. You know, I'm just a little bit of a shopaholic. And for a lot of people, you know, it's stressful to go shopping. For me, it's stress relief. If I've had a bad day, it's time for a new purse. You know, it's just that's me. I'm not proud of that. I'm just saying it. But I do find that when things are in style that I do not think are flattering to me, I'm not going to wear it. I'm not going to buy it. I stick with things that I feel good in and that are flattering, which is 99% of the time something black. I love when you quoted Diane von Furstenberg, who said, when I look myself in the mirror, I find my strength there, and then said, and every woman should have a black turtleneck. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, I have about 15 black turtlenecks because I always look good. I'm wearing one now. You know, I always look good in them. I always feel good in them. And I think women should embrace black turtlenecks no matter what.
Totally agree. I'm not a big fan of trends for that reason that you just said. Things come and go, and you can be creative and play around with the classics. And also then you're just not going to shops that are just way too fast fashion. And I just don't have the mental energy to go through and figure out every season. Like, who am I? I mean, I know who I am. I don't need to reinvent myself.
And
so,
and what do we say? Like, people wear 10% of their closet 90% of the time. And that's very true for me. I get my go-tos. It's so funny because I very often am traveling and speaking at conferences. And someone walked into my room and she looked in my closet and she said, are you expecting to go to a funeral? Because every single thing I brought with was black. And I do that because that's what I wear and I don't have to think about it. And whenever someone says, oh, you should buy colors. And I'm like, okay, but I'm not going to wear them. So
Where will I?
Yeah. So, all right, let's talk about you a little bit more. First of all, you've got a book coming up, right? Book in the works. Talk about
that. It's in the works. I am still writing. I have to write it. The idea is for it to be on shelf spring 2026, which feels like a long time from now, but not as the writer of it, as you know, it takes forever. But it is a fashion essay collection. Right now, I've got three chapters of the 20 written. Do you remember the book Love, Loss, and What I Wore?
No,
it was Nora Ephron actually then brought it to stage and they did a small Broadway play. This was about 20-ish years ago, but that was sort of the impetus about it is mine is sort of love and loss and working in fashion and finding myself, my authentic self as told through what I wore.
So I love that.
It's really fun is like chapter one has actually been out into the world. It's on my website
my next question because yes, we are very much looking forward to your book in 2026. But in the meantime, we have to read your stuff. So where can we find you?
I have a Substack. Everything is writing in black and white. And it's Substack is writing in black and white. My website is writing in black and white. And then I have a monthly column at the Quality Edit.
I will put all this in the program notes so that people can follow you. I'm familiar with Substack, but a lot of people are not. So could you just explain what Substack is and why it's so important to writers?
Yes. Well, Substack to me was my way of breaking away from the algorithm. So unlike social media, you have people that purposefully go to this website and writers can go for free and create an account and write at, you can write short, long form, whatever you want. And there is there's no algorithm associated with it. It is a phenomenal way to have freedom and creativity. And a lot of them are behind paywalls. I use mine as everything is free. And if you want to donate because it takes a lot of time to write, you donate because you care about the writer, but I don't require that because I want everyone to be able to read what I have to say. I think aging is for everybody, right? My writing is for everybody. And I write a lot about what we've talked about here today.
Yeah. No, and for me, when I learned about Substack, and I was just so happy that there was a platform that writers could put their work out to the public. And quite frankly, one of the major problems of social media, and there's many problems, but that writers don't get compensated for their work. And Substack, as you said, there's a lot that's free. Anyone can take a look, but some of it is subscription. And with some writers, you have the choice. I have a very dear friend who's a wonderful writer, Lorraine Devon Wilkie. And her writing is just incredible. She wrote for HuffPost for a long time, political stuff, but also just social stuff. And she's been on Substack for a while and you can read her stuff for free, but you also have the opportunity to pay an annual fee, which supports her work. And I think for those who are able to do so, it's really important. It's really important because we are living in a world where writers are having a very tough time because there is so much content out there and so many people who are willing to write for free. And then when you get to people who really are experienced and who are making a living from writing, it's just made it almost impossible. So I'm a big proponent of please support your writers that you're following and reading.
Because Ellen Gendler gave me
their
She gave me the annual fee, and when she did that, I was incredibly touched. Because absolutely, you're right.
Yeah.
I write for free because I'm still an unknown entity, and
Not anymore.
well, not after this, but I really want as many readers as possible, and I hope that they spread the word. And
I have no doubt. I have no doubt that that will happen. All right. So we've covered a lot, but there's a lot more. But anything that we have not talked about that you would like to mention?
oh gosh, just that, the more positive we can be about aging is just going to help our own lives. Like we said earlier, it's not just living longer and chronic disease that it can help, but it just your day to day. I think that if we can all, not to be very Pollyanna about it, but there's just so much rich lives ahead of us, and to be bogged down by all the naysaying is we should overcome that.
Well, really, and yeah, as we started off talking about the social constructs that have made aging a bad thing as opposed to something to be celebrated. So,
Something to be celebrated.
thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this
Thank
conversation and I
you
want to
so
do it
much.
again. Before I finish this up, two things. First of all, I was going to wait to mention this, but since it came up, I've just started a Substack profile because as much as I like to talk, my real passion is writing, and I have written something I am very excited about that is going to be exclusively on Substack. But I'm not going to say what it is just yet. You'll have to wait. In the meantime, I'll be posting other things on Substack: articles, musings, opinions, videos, new research, things of historical interest. And for those who like the sound of my voice, there will generally be an audio option as well. Most of my stuff will continue to be free, but I will have some extra stuff that will be included in a paid subscription, like live Zoom Q&A town halls and some special events. Lots more on that to come, but it's not too soon to head over to Substack and subscribe to my channel. And if you subscribe to my newsletter, you will be the first to know what's coming and be eligible for early bird discounts when I launch my project that I haven't said what it is yet. Second, I mentioned a retreat that's coming up with Dr. Ellen Gendler. The next Mastering Menopause Getaway retreat is in Tucson, Arizona, April 5th through 8th at the beautiful Miraval Resort, where a group will gather, bond, and learn all the latest information about perimenopause, menopause, and beyond. All of this in a beautiful setting with fabulous food and no end of activities. But the best part is I'm pairing up with none other than my friend and favorite dermatologist, the inimitable Dr. Ellen Gendler. If you're one of the few people who doesn't follow her on social media, you may remember her from my podcast on skin and hair. She's wickedly funny and super smart. And this is your chance to have our undivided attention for 4 days. We want to keep it small, so not a lot of spaces. Don't wait to sign up. The link for the retreat is in the program notes, and it would be so much fun to meet you in person. It gets kind of lonely here in Podland. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, and thank you for joining me. You will find lots more information in my Insight Information books available on Amazon.com. And follow Francie as she navigates her way through vaginal dryness, hot flashes, and pretty much every menopausal symptom you can think of.
I feel blue. She helped me see the light.